Case number 13-5008, Stop This Insanity, Inc., Employee Leadership Fund et al., Appellants v. Federal Election Commission. Ms. Brennan for the appellants, Ms. Shovelpack for the appellee.
May it please the court, my name is Tara Brennan, counsel for the appellants, Stop This Insanity, Inc., Employee Leadership Fund, and the other listed appellants. May I please request 2 minutes for rebuttal? The Supreme Court has recognized only one interest sufficiently important to outweigh the First Amendment interests that are implicated by contributions for political speech, and that is preventing actual corruption or the appearance of corruption. So said this court in Speech Now, sitting en banc. Here, however, the FEC has failed to allege any anti-corruption interest in the contribution limits and source restrictions at issue here. Rather, the FEC is urging this court to take the unprecedented measure of applying a disclosure interest to restrict political speech. No court has ever found that a disclosure interest is sufficient to restrict speech. And because the FEC here does not in any way indicate any anti-corruption interest in the restrictions at issue, the appellants respectfully request that this court reverse the trial court's order dismissing this case and denying the preliminary injunction and remand it to the district court with instructions to implement the preliminary injunction as applied to the appellants here.
Do you think it makes any difference here that that there are many other ways to accomplish this political speech? In other words, ELF is saying we want to be a separate, segregated fund, but we also want to be able to do all these other things. But the corporation itself could do all of those things.
Your Honor, it does not matter that there are other available organizational forms here. The Supreme Court's First Amendment cases are based on the foundation that citizens have the right to discuss issues, great and small, in the mode of expression that they deem best. Here, the individuals that formed the Leadership Fund, or ELF, decided that an SSF was the best way for them to communicate, and that there are other types of available organizational forms is not a sufficient consideration.
But, you know, what I don't really understand about this, and I'm hoping that this argument will help me to understand it better, is that the SSF itself is an accommodation. And as the district court said, it's a vestige of a political landscape that has passed away. And I think that's exactly right. So you say, well, citizens have the right to do this in any way, but when something is created precisely for the purpose of accommodating a circumstance that no longer exists, why should you be able to retain it?
Your Honor, an SSF should still be allowed to exist because Congress has made no law changing that. And as it stands, an SSF is an available organizational form open to individuals. If Congress does not think that SSFs have a place any longer in the political financing landscape, then Congress can do away with an SSF. However, an SSF is available.
But you're saying it's available, so, you know, it's still there, but you want to use it in a way that it's never been used before, right? And Congress hasn't validated that idea either. So, you know, you say, well, Congress can take it away if they don't like it, but then you're suggesting that we can just write something in that was never there before.
Your Honor, the Leadership Fund is not trying to write anything into the law. The Leadership Fund is an SSF and would
what
like...
What was the purpose of the SSF in the first place, when Congress created it? What was its role?
When Congress created an SSF, this was pre-Citizens United,
right.
And so corporations themselves could not speak. Therefore, in order to allow members of a corporation associational rights, they created an SSF as an exception to the restrictions on corporations for making contributions and expenditures. So therefore...
And describe for me the nature of the exception. What was the nature of the SSF? It was a very targeted sort of thing, right? And what was its purpose? The purpose of the SSF was for the corporation could get involved in elections through a very narrow door, window, whatever you want to call it, right? Through its own employees, right? Now, how do you all want to use the SSF?
The SSF is in a very similar manner. The employees that made up the corporation for which the SSF was created, these are the same employees that are similarly looking to speak here, and they think that the SSF is the best way to do that.
Why are they any better off with the SSF than without the SSF? What is it you can do with it that you can't do without it?
It's disclosure.
Well, I don't think that there's any...
Why not use the PAC? PAC's out there.
Your Honor, while a PAC is available, they don't want to use the PAC.
Why not?
Well, there has to be some reason why you want this SSF.
But their reason...
It doesn't jump out at us. What is the reason you want this?
I do not know the specific reasons why...
It's the disclosure, right? It's that you have a different disclosure regime under the SSF. But the point is that disclosure regime, following up on Judge Brown's question, that disclosure regime that you want to take advantage of in the SSF was created for a different vehicle, different time, different place, different purpose. And now you want that to use it for the PAC, right? I mean, it's a clever sort of cobbling together of something, but it sort of begs the question of, is this something Congress ever intended, or is it needed?
If Congress did not intend this, then the remedy is for Congress to change the law. As it currently stands, you cannot restrict political speech based on a disclosure interest. That has never been an interest that any court has found to suppress or muzzle political speech. Rather, disclosure has always been found to be constitutionally permissible in compelling speech. No one is debating that.
Suppress or muzzle, those are pejorative phrases. Is that what Congress was doing here through disclosure requirements, suppressing or muzzling?
Well, Congress has never suppressed disclosure rights. It has held that, the court has never suppressed disclosure rights. Mm-hmm. Rather, it has upheld requiring disclosure, but it has never said that political speech can be restricted by a lack of disclosing operating costs. If you think about the practical implications of such an argument.
If you step back and looking at the First Amendment rights of ELF, what troubles me is that there are no restriction on their rights if they choose the PAC. Go use the PAC. If you want to get involved in a political campaign after Citizens United, you can make the independent expenditures. If you want to make direct contributions, you can use the PAC. Everything is available to them. Why not use that?
I think their motivations for why they didn't want to use a PAC is irrelevant. An SSF is congressionally granted and available, and there is no reason, you can't just say that they could form in another way. If that was actually a permissible analysis, then it's surprising that the court in Citizens United, for example, didn't find that the individuals that made up the corporation there should just disband from the corporation and engage in the same speech as individuals, the same full-throated speech that they wanted to engage in. That was not sufficient to uphold the restriction on corporations. Similarly, in Citizens United, they had an SSF that was one of the most active in the country. And as Justice Stevens in his dissent argued, that if the corporation wanted to speak, it could abjure business contributions or use the funds that it had in its SSF. The majority, however, rejected that the mere sort of availability of an SSF was enough to vindicate the speech rights of the corporation. Here it's the same in the inverse. That there's a corporation or that there's other forms available are not sufficient to vindicate speech rights of the leadership fund.
That could move to the source restriction. Tell us what it is that the FEC is doing to you with respect to source restrictions that you think is unconstitutional.
The source restrictions prevent any corporation or labor union from making donations to the leadership fund. And the leadership fund would like to be able to receive donations from corporations.
Is that all of your source restrictions that you're objecting to?
Yes, Your Honor.
The question of employees being solicited, is that what your government spends some time on? You're not saying you should have the right to solicit non-executive employees.
Well, with regard to solicitation, what the leadership fund wants is to be able to solicit the general public. As you noted,
including its own employees.
The leadership fund is not looking, yes, Your Honor. The leadership fund, though, is not looking to circumvent the restrictions on soliciting members of its rank and file employees. Rather, it's just looking to solicit the general public. If the...
solicitation of sources, you would be satisfied if we entered a decision that said the restriction is invalid except insofar as it prevents solicitation of rank and file employees?
Yes, Your Honor, we're not challenging...
Why do you say that we've never found any interest great enough except corruption? Quid pro quo corruption has been what's been raised in prior cases. We've never had occasion to provide
Well, with regard to the anti-corruption interests that the FEC cites, you're correct. There has been no case that's looked at that.
Well, you began by saying the only interest we found sufficient was corruption, but which I think is mean.
Quid pro quo corruption.
But we've never had occasion to opine on rank and file employees of that station, have
we? Correct, Your Honor. But assuming that anti-coercion is a sufficient interest here, the restrictions do not further that because we are looking to solicit the general public.
And the general public includes rank and file employees. So as I said a while ago, if we entered the decision and said that that restriction is invalid except insofar as it protects rank and file employees, would you have a constitutional objection to that?
No, Your Honor, but even though rank-and-file employees are part of the general population, that does not further the interest that the FEC is pointing to.
Did I suggest anything that supposed that it did?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Your time's limited. Excuse me. Go ahead.
With regard to the solicitation restrictions, if Congress had found that there was something inherently coercive about solicitations that touch on rank and file employees, then it wouldn't have allowed the employees to be solicited twice per year, directly targeted twice per year. So in soliciting the general public, if employees are incidentally hear the message, that's certainly less coercive than being allowed to directly target them twice per year. And in fact, those restrictions also aren't sufficiently tailored to the issues here. The leadership fund is prohibited from addressing the public generally. The only people that it may actually solicit are the people that are supposedly the ones at the very highest risk of being coerced. So that seems illogical. Moreover, in Emily's List, for example, this court found that solicitation restrictions that were less onerous than the ones here were unconstitutional. In those cases, in Emily's List, the restrictions there, they could still solicit the general public, but then they had to use their hard account to pay for them, which is subject to contribution limits. This court found that those solicitation restrictions were unconstitutional. Here, the leadership fund cannot solicit the general public like Emily's List could, and is held to the same restrictions, contribution limits, and source restrictions. And so, if this court doesn't have any further questions, I'd like to reserve the additional time for rebuttal. And for the foregoing reasons, the appellants request that this court reverse the trial court's order denying this case and denying the preliminary injunction, instead enter the preliminary injunction as applied to the appellants. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I'm Erin Klopak on behalf of the Federal Election Commission. This case is about whether appellants have a constitutional right to conceal large amounts of political spending by vitiating the rules that Congress enacted to govern corporate political committees. The rights of a corporation or a group of individuals to finance unlimited independent campaign advocacy are undisputed and not at issue in this case. But the right of the public to know about the sources and financing of such speech, a right that the Supreme Court and this Court have repeatedly reaffirmed, is very much at stake.
Well, if the corporation has, after Citizens United, if the corporation has a right to be more involved in political elections than had been supposed before, why can't they use an SSF? Why do they have to be restricted to a PAC in doing so?
A corporation doesn't have to be restricted to a PAC.
Why can't they use an SSF to do what they want to do through a PAC?
Well, the premise of appellant's argument is that it's not the corporation that's looking to speak. And a corporation can finance speech independently. It can also do so through its PAC. But no court has recognized a constitutional right to make undisclosed public solicitations to pay for election-related candidacy. And as Your Honor pointed out, that is what this case is about. Opposing counsel has declined to explain the reason that appellants are seeking to proceed in financing their speech through Stop This Insanity's PAC, but it's clear that what this case is all about is disclosure, because if they...
Why shouldn't they be allowed to do that?
There's no constitutional right to evade the disclosure requirements that are applicable to PACs that do facilitate speech through public solicitations. I'm sorry?
That sounds like a conclusion, not a reason.
Well, this court in Speech Now, for example, recognized the public's right to be aware of the sources and financing of money spent on political advocacy, not only on money directly spent on independent expenditures, but also on administrative costs. There is no constitutional right to finance speech in a manner that conceals the sources of political advocacy, and that is what is at issue in this case. There is no burden on the appellants to speak. They are free to do so, in fact, in ways that are less burdensome than what they're seeking to do. In effect, they are seeking to impose burdens on themselves. Citizens United describes the separate segregated fund as a burdensome alternative means of expressing the corporation's views regarding candidates and issues in a political campaign. And it held that because it was this burdensome alternative, corporations had the right to finance such speech directly. But what appellants are trying to do is transform the separate segregated fund mechanism into something entirely different than what Congress envisioned when it created such funds. The statute in the Federal Election Campaign Act creating SSFs describes them as a fund to be utilized.
When Congress created that, Citizens United didn't exist, right?
Correct.
The terrain has changed, so...
Right. And under the new terrain...
Are we restricted to looking at Congress's purposes? Congress was looking over a landscape that doesn't exist anymore.
That's correct. And so the new landscape provides groups and corporations various means to finance unlimited campaign advocacy.
But why can't they use the SSF to do that?
They can. What they don't have the right to do is use the SSF to make undisclosed solicitations of the public to pay for the SSF speech. There is no case that has recognized right to do that.
Well, this is the case that has raised that question.
Right. Correct.
Do you really get as far by saying there is no case that recognized?
Well, yes, because they're attempting to rely on a constitutional...
What case has rejected it?
No case has rejected
it. No case has accepted it. No case has rejected it.
Right.
You've got a clean slate. You're not getting far by keeping on repeating to us that no case has recognized it. Well, no case is rejected.
But appellants, there is no burden on their financing of unlimited independent campaign advocacy. The mechanisms available for financing such speech that are available to them under the law as it exists right now do not impose any burdens on them that are greater than the burdens they seek to impose on themselves.
What is the purpose of the SSF in the world after Citizens United? What function does it play?
Well, as the district court recognized, the SSFs, in the context of independent expenditures, are vestiges of a bygone world of campaign finance. They do continue to have a significant role in facilitating corporate activities related to candidate contributions, which remain something that corporations are not permitted to do directly. So they do continue to serve that purpose. And certainly, if a corporation wants to finance independent expenditures through their SSFs, they're permitted to do so. They're simply not permitted to use SSFs to make undisclosed public solicitations to finance such speech. And in fact, soliciting the public to pay for corporate speech is inconsistent with the purpose for which SSFs were created in the first place. They're not analogous to non-connected PACs, which serve to allow groups of individuals from the public to come together based on shared views and express speech. The SSF, as Judge Brown pointed out, was an alternative means of financing corporate speech. Now, the Supreme Court and Citizens United determined that it was a more burdensome means of doing that.
It's something rather fundamentally troubling to me about your reasoning. You seem to be starting the proposition, well, this was a congressionally, statutorily created creature, therefore Congress can limit it. But what Congress was creating was not the creature, it was the limitation. If there were no FECA, it would be perfectly legal to create an organization exactly like this SSF.
But there are times.
Rights don't come from the government. I mean, rights are there and then the government limits them. But the idea that because the government created this, therefore Congress can properly limit it, seems kind of alien.
Well, no court has ever recognized a constitutional right to make undisclosed public solicitations. And courts.
But if there were no FECA, mm-hmm. then there would be no question. You could make such
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If there were no FECA,
right.
then the corporation could make any kind of contribution it wanted to, right?
Well, I suppose that's true, but we're not talking
about.
You don't
suppose that's true, you know that's true.
Okay.
The whole thing we're here about is the limitations imposed by law, not rights created by law.
No, that's correct. But the limitations on SSF's activity are a function of the purpose for which SSFs are created, and they're. Is no constitutional right to transform that mechanism into a wholly different mechanism.
What is the constitutional authority to limit? Governments don't have unlimited, government does not have unlimited authority. You keep looking at, well, where do they get their constitutional right? Where does the government get its constitutional authority?
I'm sorry, I didn't
Never mind.
Have a question.
I don't think I'm getting
well, to follow up on Judge Sintel's question, is your argument that because the government can constitutionally impose disclosure requirements, if they're in the absence of the disclosure requirement means that they can regulate speech? I mean, I think that's what opposing counsel is actually arguing.
Well, when there's a constitutional challenge, the first question is whether there is actually a burden resulting from the challenged regulations. And fundamentally, there is no burden on speech in this case because appellants are completely free to finance their campaign advocacy under the law as exists right now.
I think I understand that part of your argument, but what I thought you were saying is they have no right to evade disclosure requirements.
The argument is that they have no right to, there is not a right to transform separate segregated funds, to create a new type of political committee that does not exist under any statute, and that
what
is in fact.
What is the difference between the one they're trying to create and the one that existed in the past? You say it's a new form that's never existed.
That's correct, because.
What's the difference?
Disclosure. The
SSF didn't have disclosure in the past, did it?
Well, that was premised on the fact that the only communications...
Whoa, the SSS did not have disclosure in the past, right?
That's not entirely true. SSS do disclose all of their public communications.
How is this one different than anyone that's ever existed before?
I'm going to explain. There's a narrow carve-out. The statute includes a narrow carve-out of disclosure for communications between a corporation and its employees. Corporations were limited to soliciting employees to finance political speech, and the exemption was carefully matched to that limitation. It's entirely inconsistent.
And that didn't need to be disclosed. Is that correct?
Right, because there was no public communication.
And it's your argument now they're trying to take that narrow non-disclosure requirement and now apply it to solicitations to the general public.
That is precisely right. And the PACs that are permitted that do solicit the general public have explicit disclosure requirements.
And those have never been found to be constitutionally suspect.
On the contrary, they have been repeatedly upheld by this court in speech, now by the Supreme Court in Citizens United. I'd like to point out, in Citizens United, when the court invalidated the ban on direct corporate independent expenditures and upheld disclosure requirements, the court specifically described the campaign finance regime that it was creating as one that pairs corporate independent expenditures with effective disclosure. The regime that appellants are attempting to create in this case is completely contrary to that system.
Now, there are SSFs in existence now.
Correct.
What is it that is different in the formation itself of this one than those that exist now?
Well, I'm not sure that this one has actually engaged in any activity to date, but what it is attempting
What's
to
its
do...
Intent? What's its intent?
Its intent is to use undisclosed corporate money to pay for public solicitations, to pay for...
Now, if the SSS that exists out there now, they don't do public solicitations.
That is correct. Now, I'd like to take a moment. In addition to the disclosure interest, there's also an anti-coercion interest, which Your Honor was addressing earlier. The appellants have indicated that they're not looking to target employees, and they're just looking to solicit the general public. But as Your Honor pointed out, clearly employees are members of the general public, and the only response that appellants have come up with is that if employees among the general public are solicited and don't want to be, they can simply ignore the solicitations. But clearly Congress determined that the ability to ignore a solicitation was not a sufficient deterrent or not a sufficient way to address the government's anti-coercion interest.
What do you say that we're twice a year throw out that there? What she referred to the solicitation of employees twice a year.
That still doesn't address the solicitation of the general public, and they have made no representation about intentions to limit in any way their public solicitations.
Right.
And they,
that's two different questions. You had backed away to what you knew was troubling me about the coercion. Speak specifically to the employees. Is it a fact that they can be solicited twice a year legally?
Oh, no, because, I'm glad you asked that question.
Yeah, now we're getting there.
The fact that Congress recognized that employees could be solicited twice a year doesn't suggest that Congress wasn't truly concerned about coercion. In fact, the legislative history specifically reflects Congress's concerns, serious concerns about coercion. What the twice a year solicitations, which are subject to additional regulations, reflect is a legislative balancing between the Congress's concerns about coercion and the First Amendment rights of corporations to, at that time, finance a limited amount of political speech through their separate segregated funds. I would just like to close by pointing out that the means of financing political advocacy that appellants seek in this case are entirely unnecessary. They're more burdensome than legally permissible means available, and they undermine two important government interests. And for that reason, we request that the district court opinion be affirmed.
Thank you. How much time did Ms. Brennan have left? Okay. You had asked for 2 minutes of rebuttal time. We'll give you that.
Thank you. Opposing counsel keeps trying to recharacterize this case as about the leadership fund's right to not have to disclose that its sponsoring organization is paying for its operating costs. But this case is not about disclosure. The leadership fund could, for example, would voluntarily disclose that its sponsoring corporation is paying for such costs, but the restrictions would still stand. And in fact, there is some disclosure anyway. The fact that the leadership fund has to include its sponsoring organization's name within its own name discloses to some degree to the public who is paying for these. But additionally, there are burdens that are imposed on the leadership fund to have to change its corporate form or its organizational form. It would have to disband and put in new restrictions. And if you look at, for example, the connected organization, STI itself, when it changed to a 501c4, that process took years for it to change. And as a final point, the leadership fund would not object to an order saying that it cannot directly target its rank-and-file employees. Rather, if the rank-and-file employees happen to come across communications that are direct to the general public, as the FEC itself held in the draft advisory opinion A, these would be incidental solicitations of its rank-and-file employees and therefore would not be subject to the criminal penalties that exist in the FECA. If there are no further questions, again, we ask this court to reverse the trial court's order dismissing this case and denying the preliminary injunction and remand this with instructions to enter the preliminary injunction as applied to the appellants.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.